Live from the heartland and the crossroads of America, it's Tony Katz today.
Put a strong stake in the ground to protect Americans' privacy, whether it's from our own government or some foreign governments. That is the kind of thing we need. We need warrants in the FISA program. You shouldn't be able to, our government shouldn't be able to spy on Americans without a warrant, yet they are. Let's bring that to the floor and vote on it. These are the kind of cures we need, not the bill that's offered here today.
Congressman Thomas Massie of Kentucky making an impassioned plea not to go forward with this. I guess, are they calling it a ban of TikTok? Is that the best way to say it? We'll use it for now. There's got to be a better way. The moral of the story is he didn't get his way. It passed the House of Representatives, 349 voting yes, 66 voting no. One voting present, 14 not voting. Tony Katz, Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. Everybody's lining up to buy TikTok. We already heard that Kevin O'Leary, right? Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank. He would like to get in on this. I'm hearing that the Rumble guys, you can find my videos on Rumble, by the way. Just look for Tony Katz and you'll find them. They may want to be in on this. I get it. I absolutely positively get it. The issue here, of course, is the Communist Chinese Party. Now, I very much understand and appreciate the arguments about government getting involved in deciding who can have a business and who can't. I can appreciate such a thing. It is a worthy conversation because we have discussed before, I'm not interested and you're not interested in government picking winners and losers. We can go back to the heady days of Solyndra. Remember, the federal government was going to provide the loans for Solyndra, and it was all green this and green that. And then Solyndra goes, and next thing you know, they're getting bailed out, and we're doing it. We're like, what in the world's going on here? Picking winners and losers is horrific. The TikTok conversation does have something else to it. And it is an argument that Massie and others are going to have to, they have to deal with, come to grips with, be able to argue against, to be convincing on. One cannot trust the Communist Chinese Party, and the United States Constitution doesn't exist for Chinese communists, nor any other communist, by the way. It doesn't. It doesn't exist for communists in France or communists in Russia or communists anywhere. Now, if American citizens are communists, well, they're just damn fools, but they are at least American citizens and the Constitution is for them. They get constitutional protections, not the Communist Chinese. Allowing the Communist Chinese Party to have unfettered access, if you will, to American citizens, not even just young people, but American citizens at large, is an issue and has to be addressed, and it is a national security conversation. Are we going to somehow state that it isn't? Because I don't know how one states that with a straight face. How does one make that argument? I like the fact that this brings debate. I like the fact that Americans are engaged in this conversation. I am a little bit surprised that it passed with such speed and with such strength. I am. I favor not allowing the Communist Chinese to have any stronghold. I wouldn't allow members of the Communist Chinese Party to own land in the United States, anywhere. Not just, you know, opposed to near military bases, anywhere. I wouldn't let them own businesses in the United States. Zero. Because that's a national security issue. It is what it is. But let's be clear, if we're going to force these changes, we might be hurting people. If somehow TikTok isn't able to find a buyer, isn't able to remain. People who make money on TikTok and utilize TikTok, they're going to get hurt. That should be at least recognized. I'm Tony Katz. It seems to me that the movement in the NFL, in free agency, is crazy this year. Maybe I'm paying more attention. I'm paying more attention to sports than ever before, with the college level and how NIL, name, image, likeness, is affecting the game, the pro level, because I was sick of the guys in sports doing politics and doing it horrifically. So I said, well, then I'm going to start doing sports, because who are they to muscle in on my turf? Who do these people think they are? Tony Katz today. Good to be with you. But the movement has been nuts, and the money has been criminally insane. And I can't figure out if this means that the league is just making so much, they got to spend it somewhere, the teams. Or is this just what it takes to win? Is this what it takes to win? JMV joins me right now. His friends call him JMV. He is the voice of sports, heard across Indiana on 93.5, 107.5, The Fan, and does his work nationwide. I'm going to take you around the horn, man. But before we get to it, before we get to the individuals, like this Kirk Cousins going to the Atlanta Falcons for $180 million after he already got the blockbuster deal to take him to Minnesota. Is the league just making so much money they feel they got to spend more on the players in order to make it make sense? Which, you know, goes along with this thing about should the players have more quote unquote equity in the league? The NBA certainly talks about this stuff. Or is it that the amount of good players is quite literally in such short supply that you have to overspend to ensure you're at least competitive?
Well, you have to do that. You mentioned Kirk Cousins, Tony. You have to do that definitely at the quarterback position, because it is the most important position in sports anywhere, is that one position. And Kirk Cousins is a really good example of how fortunate one can be if you continue to move forward. Seriously, in terms of fortunate dudes of all time, he's a top five. You think about when he entered the league, then obviously made his splash. He was going to back up RG3, remember, in Washington. And then he ended up getting the job. Then he ended up going to Minnesota, getting paid. And now Atlanta thinks, you know, among all these quarterbacks that might be available, and certainly, Tony, those that are going to be draft worthy, maybe even six in the first round of the upcoming NFL draft, that he is the guy down in Atlanta. It only takes one. I mean, really, it only takes one person, one manager, one talent evaluator within an organization to say, you know what? The difference is this guy. I like this guy because, and there's extra scrutiny and certainly extra money, top level money that goes into the quarterback position. The other positions, I mean, certainly when you look at quarterback, left tackle, wide receiver, corner, you know, edge rusher, those are all the most important positions in the NFL, and you're going to get paid handsomely for it. But there are also some that end up, you sign a contract, let's just say, for example, 3 years and $39 million, something like that. It depends on how much money you get up front, you know, how much you're going to get in guaranteed money, because you may not see the end of that particular contract. Plus this, Tony, the NFL is such a short window. Think about when we start talking about these guys so-called getting over the hill, late 20s now, and sure as heck when they reach 30, we start talking about how you have to start replacing these guys with draft picks and younger players. So it's all a part of what I just explained, but at the top of that list is the overall value that is absolutely blown apart with that of the quarterback position, and that's where it starts.
So let's take a look at a couple of these. The Kirk Cousins move to Atlanta, $180 million. Baker Mayfield gets re-signed to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for $100 million. And I gotta say, like, Baker Mayfield may have found his home. I've always liked him. I'm happy to see the success. How is Mayfield only worth $100 million extension, but they figure that Kirk Cousins is worth $180 million?
Yeah, well, I mean, Atlanta, for one, Tampa's, you know, retaining Baker Mayfield, so you got that dynamic going. And then, you know, Cousins was just basically a guy that was on the open market there that Atlanta ended up taking a shot at. So there's a lot of differences there. Atlanta is just in desperate need of a quarterback. And then Tampa felt like that they had their quarterback there. And then they have adjustments, Tony, maybe not this year, but certainly further down the road, adjustments in how they handle the salary structure. I'll give you a great example where I'm sitting right now in Indy. We're probably going to see them, because of the salary cap, we're going to see them end up adjusting some salaries of some guys, probably three guys on that offensive line. Nelson, Kelly, and Smith will probably have their contracts adjusted. Buckner probably on the other side defensively. And that's what you have to do, Tony. It's like putting together a puzzle, and it does start with that quarterback. And the value of the quarterback sometimes just so happens to be the year in which they have availability, and a job like Atlanta is open, and they're absolutely dying for anybody that has been productive in the past. That all matters right there, plus that one person that believes in you, that believes you're that final piece, especially at that position, is the reason why we do see that fluctuation between salaries and such at that position and really others. It is an interesting thing, is the contract, the salary cap, and all that goes into paying these guys, Tony, in the NFL.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports. Certainly on the quarterback side, Kirk Cousins is the biggest one, the contract extension for Baker Mayfield. And then Gardner Minshew, who came into service because Anthony Richardson with the Colts got injured, he is now with Las Vegas, a two-year, $25 million deal. But I thought they were kind of happy with this guy, Adrian. I can't remember his name right now.
Aiden O'Connell.
O'Connell
from Purdue.
I thought they were happy with this guy. I think he performed admirably for them. I wasn't quite sure why they took Minshew, but on the running back side, it gets weirder because you've got Josh Jacobs, who leaves Las Vegas, right? Remember, it's the Las Vegas Raiders now, for Green Bay, gets the payday, a four-year, $48 million deal. Then Saquon Barkley leaves the Giants for the Eagles, which has Giants fans in an uproar, three-year, $37 million deal. But the one that is mind-boggling, the Titans gave up Derrick Henry. He's going to Baltimore, two-year, only $16 million. I think it could be like $20 million overall. You've got $9.5 million that's guaranteed. That backfield is now Lamar Jackson, if you will, and Derrick Henry. Baltimore seems like a team that says, wait, we lost to Kansas City? This is nonsense. Let's go build to win. Out of the running backs, which team did best?
Well, I will say this. Baltimore's the team that's going to run the football, Tony. And everybody thought, you know, once Tennessee was moving on from Derrick Henry, that was going to be the play. The Jacobs move, and then what Green Bay is doing to replace, for example, Aaron Jones, who I think ended up in Minnesota. They still have to decide on what they're going to do with Dylan as well. What's kind of interesting about the running back position is it is noted to being in the NFL not a position that you spend a lot on, but there was a lot of gnashing of teeth with these guys moving so far in the first couple of days of NFL free agency. And you know, you look at a guy like Jonathan Taylor. Jonathan Taylor had to battle. Remember, he sat out, if anybody pays attention to the Colts, through camp, and he was injured, and there was that back and forth. And then, you know, everybody decided to play nice, and he's going to be a benchmark of this Colts offense. But normally, that running back position is looked at incredibly disposable. And here may be a reason why maybe this offseason, Tony, it's not viewed as much as what it is normally, is you kind of look at those coming out right now in the NFL draft, and you know, maybe you don't see guys that can help you right away. Baltimore wants a win right now, so they want to go with a proven commodity. The Packers want to win right now. They're in that position, so they're moving on from one and then going with a proven commodity. And with Gardner Minshew, you brought him up first, $15 million guaranteed. We kind of wondered around here if he was going to be able to stay. He's certainly necessary because you have no idea if Anthony Richardson is going to remain healthy next season. And that was a great backup play for the Colts a year ago. But $15 million, you're not going to be able to compete with that. And then plus, Tony, you get Aiden O'Connell, you get Gardner Minshew in Vegas, and you may end up drafting somebody. You're going to have six quarterbacks maybe in round number one with availability, and the Raiders may be a team that would hard target a rookie quarterback as well. So it is amazing, but Minshew moves because he got paid, and he's going to have the opportunity to ultimately play and maybe even start for that team. So it's interesting.
Talking to JMV, he is the voice of sports all across America. He works with me in Indianapolis. And there were some other quarter running back moves as well. But you mentioned the defensive side of the ball. I'm gonna talk about Indianapolis, talk about the Colts for a moment here. Because they re-signed Zaire Franklin, linebacker, three-year, like $32, $33 million deal. They re-signed Kenny Moore, a three-year, $30 million deal. That is a crazy amount of money to be putting into the defense. They re-signed Grover Stewart. Like, here is a team that didn't go looking. They picked up one guy from Miami. I know that. They didn't go looking. They looked at their own guys and said, here is the Brinks truck. Here is all the money. Am I seeing it wrong? Or is this just, I mean, this is a huge amount of dollars, never mind from the Colts, but in general, the money seems to be astronomical this year.
No, it is too. And you notice a lot of the things you just read. And, you know, obviously, I know this a little bit more than anything else because I'm sitting here right now. You can tell with all those three-year deals, one thing. Is if Anthony Richardson is the guy, when all these contracts are going to be expiring, will be the time when you're going to have to pay Anthony Richardson. That's what the Colts are hoping, a heck of a lot of money in a long-term extension. So that's how all these, that's the reason why, one of the reasons why all these contracts are setting up that way. The other is Chris Ballard. It's amazing. It's been 7 years. And the results have been one playoff win and no titles in the AFC South. He's always gone by the path of re-signing your own, which is great. Built-in loyalty. You know what these guys are. You know, ultimately, you don't want to overpay on the free agent market. But it hasn't shown the results that it should so far. And I'm going to wonder, especially this year, right? After 7 years, I'm going to wonder whether or not people start looking at that now and saying, hey, you know, maybe you should dabble a little bit more. Maybe you should take a more lofty swing in free agency than just that path, you know, this unproven path of not, at least results-wise, of not going out there and dabbling deeply in it and re-signing your own. I understand all the three-year deals. I understand you know your own, so you know their warts, you know their issues, and you don't want to bring anybody else in. But around here, it hasn't shown results, i.e. it hasn't worked, and we're kind of doing the same old thing. We're on that treadmill right now as far as doing that again, and we'll see if it works going into year number 8 for Chris Ballard. But that is part of the dynamic around here where people go, hey, you know, maybe it's time to have a different philosophy, and clearly Chris Ballard does not.
Yeah, but it's not just the Colts. If you take a look at the Dolphins, they lose defensive tackle Christian Wilkins. He signs with Las Vegas for a four-year, $110 million deal. They lose guard Robert Hunt to Carolina, five-year, $100 million deal. They lose Brandon Jones, their safety, to Denver. I mean, that's a bit of a gut. They brought people in, much lower numbers, but also a gut. As you see it, JMV, so far, winners and losers from free agency.
I'm going to give you one clear winner, and I thought they were a winner a year ago. And it starts certainly with the quarterback that they drafted and the success he had as a rookie. But how about the Houston Texans? They dabbled a year ago in free agency. They went name recognizable, but guys that were a little bit older, right? And they got performances. And they're doing the same thing this offseason and also acquiring Joe Mixon, the running back from Cincinnati as well. And remember, C.J. Stroud last year, you know, they went both offense and defense. They won the AFC South. They won a postseason game against the Browns. I liked what they did last year. I thought that was proven. And I like what they're doing right now, too, to add to that team and add to the success that we saw a year ago in the rookie season of C.J. Stroud. If there's one team at the top of the list so far, I like what they have done. It is the Houston Texans.
JMV, the voice of sports, always appreciate you taking the time to be with us. More to get to. I'm Tony Katz. This is Tony Katz Today.
We all know the world is literally at war. They're shooting at us, in addition to the fact that our friends in Ukraine are running out of ammo, and our friends in Israel need help as well. There are two things we're going to be dealing with in the next couple of weeks. Number one is the defense appropriation bill, which will come over to us, hopefully, next week. Second, I want to encourage the speaker again to allow a vote, let the House speak on the supplemental that we sent over to them several weeks ago.
That supplementals the $60 billion for Ukraine, the $14 billion for Israel, I think it's $9 billion for Taiwan. The problem is there's been no addressing of the border, and this is the House's argument. Sure, the Senate puts together a bipartisan piece of legislation, but it failed in the Senate. No one tries again. No one says, hey, let's just have a bill to finish the wall, which is really a fence, which is what Border Patrol wants anyway. Let's say we don't want enough fentanyl coming across the border that could kill 270 million Americans. Do that first and then get to the other things. But in Ukraine, when it comes to this war with Russia, this invasion from Russia, Ukraine right now is on the losing end, and they don't have the ammunition, so the Pentagon put together $300 million for them simply by going to their books and erasing from here and adding to there. Tony Katz today. It's great to be with you. Major Mike Lyons joins me, retired United States Army, West Point guy. You hear him on this radio show constantly. You hear him on other radio shows, but you shouldn't be listening there. M-A-J Mike Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, M-A-J Mike Lyons on X. They did fancy accounting and got Ukraine $300 million. Before we get into the money, give us an update on what's happening in this war with Russia, which has been at a great amount of stalemate, with Russia simply being able to throw more bodies at the problem, which would give them the advantage.
Tony, great to be back with you. Inch by inch, Russia is gaining an advantage on the ground in Ukraine. And that's because they have greater capacity. They can bring more industrial strength to the battlefield. They are being resupplied. We're seeing in areas in the south, for example, them even sacrificing still a great number of troops. And the Ukraine military does not have the ammunition, doesn't have the artillery ammunition in particular, to defend certain places. They've been forced to do retrograde operations. We saw a little bit of a counteroffensive operation that took place a few days ago. The Ukraine decided to attack more to the east in Kharkiv and in the north area, the northeastern part. If you go, you know, kind of due east from Kyiv, but it didn't really amount to much. You saw the Russians claim that they were able to blunt this counteroffensive that took place there. But it's just coming down to numbers, and it's coming down to the capacity that Russia has. And Ukraine needs about 100,000 artillery rounds a month. Let's say they probably have 500,000 in reserve right now. The United States provides, I believe, anywhere from 30 to 40,000 a month. And that's with increasing our supply chain. The rest of Europe can't make up that difference. So they're going to eventually run out of ammunition. And that's what Russia is waiting to have happen. And now the upper hand is from Russia's perspective, from the negotiation side. So until that $60 billion of aid gets approved, I don't think you're going to see the Russians stopping. And I think neither side will be able to accomplish their objectives. But once Ukraine runs out of ammo in 6 to 8 months, then they're in big trouble.
I think it's acceptable to ask the question, why is Ukraine's ammunition needs on us? Why is this solely a U.S. issue? Where is Europe to provide Ukraine dollars or bullets, bullets or dollars to buy bullets?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with factories and who's manufacturing those. And the United States has kept that capability internal, hasn't outsourced it. Some of those European countries have outsourced that when they don't have a steel industry. It's very expensive for Germany, France, and some of the countries that have larger the largest GDPs, for example, to do that. This is when you go back to, you know, when Donald Trump first ran for president about bringing the steel industry back to the United States. You can't have a country unless you have a steel industry. Well, that's the raw materials that are required for countries to manufacture artillery ammunition is not always in those countries. And it is in America. It is, to see the shining sea in our country here. So that's why the Americans have the greatest amount of burden in, when it comes to making this ammunition. And in times of peace, it's the same time that's it's manufactured, that's sent for training, that's used to jumpstart our economy. So it's the fact that it's because of our capability is why we're doing it.
It would seem to me that the issue could be brought up as, okay, we make the bullets, so let Europe pay for the bullets. This is their border. Poland doesn't want Ukraine to fall, and neither should any other European nation. The question is, how come they're not putting up the money?
Right, and I think that's a great question. I think the what basically is happening is the $60 billion package that the United States has been proposed is all about kind of a lend-lease, and that it's giving them the money to spend. It's basically the United States is going to pay for U.S. workers to manufacture this equipment that sends it back over to Ukraine. And you can say that it potentially is part of our own defense budget, because from an inside, you know, economy, it's not new money that's coming in from the outside. But this is from our perspective, why it's in our interest. It's because if we had thought we'd have a country like Ukraine destroy the Russian military in place 2 years ago, what would that cost be to us? Would we pay $100 billion to do that? Because every day that goes by that we can provide this ammunition and the supplies to Ukraine, they take out more Russian capability. So that's, you're right, from an economic perspective, it's a closed economy. They're not providing the money, but it's coming back to Americans in terms of jobs and opportunity here.
Talking to Major Mike Lyons, retired United States Army, this has been the conversation since the funding was put into this border legislation, that this is really a jobs bill for the United States, and we get to create all this ammunition. If you had said, here's money to replenish American stockpiles of ammunition, and it's going to go to Ukraine, I think that if you had done that separately, that probably would have passed very, very easily. As you watch this landscape, and you and I are on, I think, the same page here, maybe to varying degrees, I believe in providing Ukraine the weaponry. I believe in providing Ukraine the bullets. I think them being able to fight off this Russian aggression is extremely important. I'm not interested in Russia on Poland's border anymore than it has to be. What are you hearing about movement within Congress? Is there if you got this discharge petition that they want to bring to the House that would force the legislation to the floor for a vote? And of course, Democrats are going to vote for it. Are Republicans getting around to this? Are they coming around to this idea? Or is there a real philosophical issue that someone could sink their teeth into when it comes to Ukraine?
I think that Republicans are, for now, they appear to be pocket vetoing. I'm getting a little out of my lane here on this, but I think for whatever reason, is it coming from Donald Trump or where the underlying issue is? I understand we have to fix our border for sure, but from a national security perspective, we have allies in Europe. Ukraine is not a NATO ally. I understand all those kinds of things, but this is the opportunity from a national security perspective. We already see Russia being so diminished now. They've become fundamentally a vassal state of China. They've taken out that capability. Still have nuclear capability as well. But from a national security perspective, I just don't see how you can square the circle by saying it's just as important to be strong overseas as it is here in our country. So let's hope that they can get together and bring something under the wire to give Ukraine at least this opportunity to continue their fight and bring Russia to the negotiation table. If Donald Trump gets elected president and figures out a way to stop it, that's fine. I think that would mean that Ukraine probably loses 20% of its landmass, and we go to this 2014 border that was created artificially back then. Whether the Ukraine people would go for that remain to be seen.
This brings us to the $300 million that the Pentagon magically found with their magic pen and their magic eraser. I have never been able to do this with my own budgeting, by the way. I have never found $300 million. But they're going to send it. Now, are they sending the money? Or does that mean they're looking at U.S. companies saying, make bullets, or we're buying bullets and we're shipping them over?
Yeah, I think the second, I think this is a good example of when you do a government contract, you put in things like, you know, a 10% overage if you need it, and you put in some kind of contingencies that allow the government to plus up and order more. And that's what I think happened here. And it just goes to show you the size of the government and the Pentagon, that they could look out over 10 and 15 year contracts and come up with an extra $300 million. So it's creative accounting. And on one side, it's also, you know, creative deal making. It helps our U.S. companies that are currently manufacturing these kinds of weapons, but it's a short term gap. And, you know, we thought the last $100 million was the last time this is going to happen. It just shows you that they could still, you know, kind of squeeze the lemon a little bit more when they have to.
So does this $300 million make a dent? When the bullets get there, how much ramp does it give Ukraine?
Probably 9 months, I'd say. 9 months of confidence with regard to knowing they can continue the fight and at least defend and maintain the positions that they have. They're going to try to go on some kind of counteroffensives here and there, which I still think are foolhardy. We know the F-16s and the planes are not there yet as well. We haven't seen them enter the theater. We're unfortunately seeing Abrams tanks being destroyed. I'm not sure I'd ever would see that in my lifetime, given what I think that tank is capable of. But if, you know, as the Russians continue to pound away on certain positions, they're able to do that. So I'd say $300 million buys them another eight to 9 months at this point. And like everything else, the can gets kicked down the road and we revisit them.
You brought up a few moments ago the idea that if a deal gets made, Ukraine gives up 20% of its landmass. They give up the Donbas. It goes to these artificial borders, and then this will be done. It would seem to me that this is the end game anyway, that the only way mm-hmm. this ends, if Russia can throw more bodies at the situation than Ukraine, which they can, this ends with Ukraine having to come to some kind of settlement, because it's clear that the quote-unquote world community isn't going to get Russia to stop, and they don't have the stomach for it. They don't have the want, desire for it. They're not going to do it. Ukraine's going to give up the land anyway. That's what it sounds like you're saying, and that's what the when you take a look at the whole board, that's what it looks like it's coming to. So how come this isn't broached as an idea? And the follow-up is, what makes us think that Putin would accept a deal?
Well, I think because President Zelensky wouldn't accept it. And I think that's, you know, this is just me saying this. That has to be accepted from the Ukraine government and the people running there. And they don't feel that that is the case. And so we're all trying to get to that spot where we could, you know, the guns go silent, but that the people running the government don't feel that's going to happen. Whether Ukraine will never have the military capability to vanquish Russia from those borders. They hadn't had it for 10 years. They won't likely create it. What changes the equation is if Ukraine is allowed into NATO. And you and I have talked about this before. That genie's out of the bottle now, but at this point, that's likely the only way that Russia does stop, because if Russia does know that once some kind of peace is made and it's stopped, and then Ukraine then has NATO protection, then that does change the equation for Russia doing something in the future. That's the concern. What if Russia does stop, will they come back in 10 or 20 years? Who's the leader of Russia then? What will their thoughts be at the time? But if Ukraine's in NATO by that point, at least they'll have the borders that will be drawn by this.
Before I let you go, while I've still got a minute left, let's move it over to Israel, where the president, Joe Biden, said that he was going to build a pier in the Mediterranean to get aid to Gaza, which, said better, is he's going to build a port for Hamas to be able to get more weapons from Iran, and the aid will never get to the people. The United States military is going to float into the Mediterranean and build a port for Hamas?
Yeah, you know, good example of civilian control of the military, because, you know, as I've talked to other analysts about this, the military is right now saluting going about this mission. But they're likely extending this time frame because there are just an incredible amount of pitfalls to this mission to possibly do this. It's actually a capability the Army has. It's not something that the Navy does, first and foremost. But the 18th Airborne Corps has this capability. The ship is being loaded now out of Fort Eustis in Virginia, and will eventually make its way over there. Think of this as in Gaza, there's a pier. They have a pier that the Israelis do control. And with this will be an extension of that pier. There'll be a road that will run out and allow ships to dock. However, to protect it, it's the Lebanon 1982. It's the coal. It's all these things about the kind of target that this could be that leaves the military concerned. And I think eventually they're going to come back and tell the administration, we really can't get there from here on this. It just puts too much of our U.S. Troops in danger. And I think this idea will eventually go away.
Major Mike Lyons, retired United States Army, M-A-J, Mike Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, M-A-J, Mike Lyons, on X. Find him there. I appreciate you taking the time. I've got much more to get to, and not enough time to do it. I'm Tony Katz. Fani Willis takes a hit. This isn't a love life conversation, and her lover, Nathan Wade. I just love saying lover. Oh, we're talking about the DA there in Fulton County. This was seemingly corrupt in terms of I'm going to pay my boyfriend more money, and then he's going to take me on trips that I'm going to allegedly pay cash to reimburse him for. But who knows if I did or I didn't. Tony Katz today, what's going on? The story is that a Fulton County judge basically dismissed six counts in the Georgia election interference case. It's pretty big stuff. The court's concern is less that the state has failed to allege sufficient conduct of the defendants. In fact, it has alleged an abundance. However, the lack of detail concerning an essential legal element is, in the undersigned opinion, fatal. This from Judge Scott McAfee. Oh, this is the story of the day. Even more than the TikTok ban, this might... the TikTok conversation is probably a bigger story. I mean, now that I think about it, the TikTok story is probably a bigger story. This is a pretty big story. This is a pretty big story that was developing throughout the day, and I will get into more of this tomorrow. Find everything I'm doing over at TonyKatz.com, TonyKatz.com. Tomorrow, everyone, take care.